Okay, good morning, everybody. 10:20 on July 8th, Wednesday, July 8th for Chem 3. And I was just going over some announcements for the class. So we have finished Chapter 4. We're skipping Chapter 5 entirely. Today we're starting Chapter 6. 6.1, molar mass, you guys are proficient at that already. We've already gone over molar mass. You know how to calculate molar masses. So if you need a refresher, you can always go through and read Chapter 6. But I think that you've got that under control. We will utilize some of those skills in the empirical and molecular formulas that we're going to start today. So today's lecture, I'm going to do 6.2, and we'll look at empirical and molecular formulas. And then tomorrow, we'll jump into molarities. I have a new quiz up on Canvas that is the electronic configuration. It is not an online quiz. It is a quiz where you download the PDF, and then you draw manually, draw your data, put your answers into the sheet there, take a picture of it, re-upload it, try to upload it as a PDF as you can, if you can. The instructions or specific instructions are there. This is designed to be a 15-minute quiz. This is designed to be just a 15-minute in-class quiz. So this should not take you long. You should be able to do this pretty darn quickly. And so don't delay on going in and doing this quiz, because I have one more that I want to give you, which is the Lewis structures. So I'd like to get a Lewis structure quiz in there as well too. And I'm going to do the Lewis structure quiz in the same sort of way. So I wanted to do one at a time. I wanted to make sure that we were all going to be able to do this and complete it properly and get it uploaded. And that if you don't have a printer, this is what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about people not having the ability to be able to print things. If you don't have a printer, then download the PDF and just draw it on paper. Just write the answers on paper and just try to keep it neat and clean so that it's readable. Take a picture of that and upload it so that you don't have to actually enter the answers in the PDF if that is too much of a problem. Because I know that some people may not have printers at home in order to be able to do that. So just to be clear, when do I think the Lewis structure test will happen? Ooh, I'll get a test up at the end of this weekend that'll have Lewis structures and electronic configurations and all of that stuff. And so I'll have another test up online, and it will probably be a combination of online and electronic submission. I'll have to figure out exactly how to do that. That's been the main problem with this material, is that while I was starting to feel good with Canvas, in terms of my ability to be able to put material up online, as I experimented a lot with different ways of doing electronic configurations and having you guys enter the data, I could not find a way to do it that was not just multiple choice. And I am so averse to multiple choice that I try to figure out how to have you guys input the data directly. And there was just no ability to input arrows or other things like that. And structures are going to be impossible as well. So they're going to have to be handwritten components with that. Kerrigan, does the class end on the 24th, and are we going to have a final? Yes, the class ends on the 24th, and we will have a final, and I will have a final exam. I don't know. I may not make it entirely cumulative. We'll have to see how I feel about that final exam. And we'll leave the final exam sort of open. We end on the 24th, but then there's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. My grades are due Monday or Tuesday. I think I'll probably have that exam due back in like on the Sunday. So giving you three days to try to finish that exam, which should be reasonable if it's the same sort of linked exam that we've had been doing and leaving it open-ended. I think that should work out fine. And then that'll give me a day to be able to grade it and to finish out grades. So yes, we end on the 24th. I know the babies are beautiful. I love seeing the babies. That's perfect. Okay, and I also put up a new homework for Chapter 4, and I put up the answer key for Chapter 4 as well. So that is online, so you've got that as well. So look for those, and make sure you go in and do that electronic configuration quiz. Should not take you very long. Okay, let's jump in.
Question.
Yes, please.
The nomenclature worksheet, is that just for us, or do you want us to turn that into you?
Oh, I forgot about that. Good that you saw that. Nomenclature worksheet is up there too. Ideally, I'd like that turned in.
very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that that nomenclature worksheet will give you good practice. And that nomenclature was part of chapter four. So where I said that we finished chapter four, I put that nomenclature worksheet in there because I thought it was better practice than what the book was giving you.
Yes, it's super good.
Yeah, and it is a tutorial in and of itself. So it has all the instructions in it and reminders of how to do each piece of that nomenclature. So I thought that that would be helpful for you guys. So thank you for reminding me of that, Kerrigan. That's excellent. So the nomenclature worksheet.
When would you like that turned in, sir?
Oh, I think I put a due date on it on like Thursday night or Friday night.
The 9th, I think.
Yeah, I think is what I did. The nomenclature worksheet will take you a little more time. That's probably more like an hour worth of time to go through and do that. Maybe an hour and 45 minutes, hour to hour and a half. That's what I would say that nomenclature worksheet should take you. Because you'll have to look up a number of the things, but there's a sheet on there that has all the ion names, the polyatomic names, so you can reference them right off the sheet, which is kind of helpful. So that should be good. Okay, let's jump in and start with empirical formulas. So what we have done to date is we know what an empirical formula is. The empirical formula is the lowest ratios within a formula that we can have. So it is the smallest ratio of atoms in a molecule. For instance, if we have a molecule that is C6H12O6, and this is the molecular formula, then the empirical formula would be CH2O.
Did you mean to put a 6 after the first O?
I did, thank you. And essentially, what we're doing is we're taking the molecular formula, C6H12O6, and reducing it by dividing each thing by 6 in order to get the CH2O. Or another way to think of that is that 6 times CH2O is equal to the C6H12O6, that I'm multiplying this by each one of the subscripts in order to get the molecular formula. And over here, I am multiplying the empirical by 6 in order to get that molecular formula. And that is true in terms of mass as well. If I take a look at the mass of the empirical formula and I do the molar mass of CH2O, that is 12.01 plus 2 times 1.008 plus 16. This is 30.03 grams per mole. And if I multiply that by 6, I get 180.16 grams per mole. And so it is true by formula, it is true by mass in terms of the empirical formula and the molecular formula and their ratios and their relationship. So it's true by formula and it's true by mass.
Can you scroll up for just a second?
Yes. So one of the things that you guys have not asked me is you have not asked me, how do I know what a molecular formula actually is? If we can't see molecules and we don't know and we can't count the atoms in the molecules, how do we know what the formula for the molecule actually is? Well, let me...
I wondered that about everything that you've talked about so far. Like, how do you know...
How do we know?
Yeah. Agree.
I can't even compute in my head how this is discovered and learned and taught.
That's a great question, Jeremy. Hang on to that for a second. Let me get one piece of information that I need here, and then I will explain that to you, or some of it. I needed a couple of numbers here before I start. And okay, I am good now. I think all my percentages add up. Okay, how do I know all that stuff? That's a really great question. You know, when we went through, what was it, chapter 3, I think, when we started talking about the atomic theory and all the experiments that Dalton had done, the experiments that that Rutherford had done, all of those different experiments that keyed into the idea of what the atom looks like and the structure of the atom and the electronic structure and everything. We don't go through those similar sorts of experiments that have allowed us to be able to determine what the molecular structure is of things and how we know how many of each atom there are in a molecule and all of that stuff. This chapter, chapter 4, starts to address that. So let me take an example and show you an example of what we might do. Let's take a material that we don't know what the material is. And we take that material either as a solid, liquid, or gas, whatever it is. This is an unknown. And what we do is we put it in a material or in an instrument called a bomb calorimeter. And we burn it. Basically, we combust it. And an output of this instrument is that it goes into another instrument called a mass spec. Okay, my colleagues are texting me here. So this is what's called a mass spectrometer. And the mass spectrometer, so we combust the material. And this is what is called a combustion analysis. This is one way to do it. There are others. And out of the mass spectrometer comes the percent carbon, the percent hydrogen, the percent oxygen, and whatever other elements happen to be in the molecule. It will give me those percentages. So the mass spectrometer, what it does is it takes and ionizes these materials, passes them through a magnetic field, and as they pass through the magnetic field, they curve to more or less a degree. So a mass spec is an instrument that first takes and ionizes the sample. So we have an ionizer. The atom, once it goes through the ionizer, comes out with a charge on it, and then it passes through a magnetic field. And as it passes through the magnetic field, it curves. The curvature is based on the mass Z to charge ratio. Let's do it, mass to Z, mass to charge ratio. Actually, let's not even do Z, let's just write charge. Mass to charge ratio. And it bends more or less so that the more massive something is, the farther up on the scale it will be. The less massive, the farther out on the scale or closer in on the scale it'll be. And basically what this gives me is it gives me the mass of the particle. It gives me both mass and percent. So I could tell the difference between a carbon and a hydrogen and an oxygen by their mass, and I'm also getting the percentages that are coming out of this. So what we do is we do a combustion analysis on a material. I know I'm kind of going through this. We do a combustion analysis on a material, gives 40% carbon, 6.71% hydrogen, and the remaining percent, 53.29, oxygen. There are other experiments that we can do to determine the molar mass of the entire compound. The molar mass of the compound is 180.16 grams per mole. Find both the empirical formula and molecular formula for the compound. This is the way the problem is typically stated. A combustion analysis on a material gives 40% carbon, 6.71% hydrogen, and 53.29% oxygen. The molar mass of the compound is 180.16 grams per mole. Find both the empirical and molecular formula for the compound. Kai, at some point in undergraduate chemistry, do we take a research methods class? No, actually you don't. That's an interesting class. Actually, no, I take that back. You do. If you are taking a chemistry major, if you're doing a chemistry major, one of the classes you take is called quantitative analysis. And in quantitative analysis, it is more or less a research methods class. It is a class that is designed to teach you many different ways of doing analysis on many different types of instruments and looking at both how do we know to what degree we know the answer and how well that technique works. So quantitative analysis is kind of that research method class. All right, I have a process for solving these. And I write it out this way. Steps. The steps are convert percentages to mass in grams. That's step number one. Number two, convert the grams to moles of each element. Number three, find the smallest whole number ratios. Of the moles. Step number four. From here, what we do is if ratios are fractional, then find a multiplier. To obtain whole numbers.
By that, do you mean balance the equation?
Not exactly.
So, I guess there's not really it's not really an equation, huh? Because there's not two different sides.
Right. It's not an equation. So we'll see what I mean. I'm going to give you some examples and show you kind of how that works out. This is then, we have now found the empirical. To find the molar mass, step 5, what we do is we find molar mass of empirical formula. Divide molar mass of compound. By molar mass of empirical. Out of that, you should get a whole number. That whole number, you multiply the subscripts of the empirical by the result of the division in step 6. And that is your molecular formula. Okay, so that's a lengthy thing. And in order to remember those steps, I sort of come up with a little rhyme, percent to mass. Actually, I won't do it with arrows. I'll just do it, percent to mass, mass to moles, divide by small, multiply to whole. That's my little rhyme that gets you through steps 1 through 4, essentially. Percent to mass to moles, divide by small, multiply till whole. That's the process that we go through. And let's take this problem that I've set up here, the combustion analysis, and show how we would go through all these steps in order to get to the molecular formula and figure out what the molecular formula is.
Can you quickly explain why the empirical mass is different than the compound of the mass, or the mass of the compound?
Because when we look at the empirical mass is based on the ratios of 1 to 2 to 1 instead of 6 to 12 to 6. So basically the empirical formula in this case is going to be 1/6 the mass of the molecular formula. Okay. The empirical formula doesn't really exist. The empirical formula is just the smallest whole number ratios. And it is the best that we can get out of the combustion analysis. In order to figure out the actual molecular formula, I also need to know the mass of the overall molecule so that I can figure out how many units of the empirical go into the molecular.
Got it.
Okay. So following my steps, what I'm going to do is make a table of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen for the molecule that I am doing here. So I have carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the percentages that I was given. This was 40.00%. It was 6.71%. And for oxygen, it was 53.29%. So I have these percentages. The next thing that I want is I want to go to mass in grams. So I want a number of grams. So let me ask you this. If you had a 100-gram sample, let's say that your sample was 100 grams flat even, perfect 100 grams, and 40% of it was carbon, how many grams of that sample would be carbon?
40.
40, exactly. Intuitively, you know how to do that. We assume 100% sample here, and that these percentages then turn directly into grams.
Sir, what does assume 100% sample mean?
Assume 100 gram sample, and then your percentages turn into grams. So if I assume 100 gram sample, then because percentages are based on 100, the percentages automatically become grams. And I don't have to do any additional math. The percentages just get turned directly into grams. Okay. From there, I want to get to moles. And so I want to find moles of carbon, moles of hydrogen, moles of oxygen. So what I do is I take those gram values and I do a little stoichiometry. 40 grams of carbon multiplied for the molar mass of carbon, it is 12.01 grams of carbon for every 1 mole of carbon. And I'll get the number of moles of carbon. When you do this, do not round the value off. Do not worry about sig figs. It is 40.00 divided by 12.01. I'm going to leave this number run long in my calculator. 3.33055 7868. This is the number of moles of carbon. I'm going to do the same thing for hydrogen. So I'm going to get 6.71 grams of hydrogen multiplied that for every 1.008 grams of hydrogen, I get 1 mole of hydrogen. And I'm going to get a value down here, 6.71 divided by 1.008, 6.6567, 46032. That's my moles of hydrogen. And we'll do the same thing for oxygen, 53.29 grams. And for oxygen, it's 16.00 grams for every 1 mole. And we'll get a number of oxygen moles, 53.29 divided by 16, 3.3306, 25. And there's no digits beyond the 25, the rest would be zeros. And that is my moles of oxygen. Now I need the ratios. And I want to know what the ratio of each one of these things are to the other. So the way that I do that is I find whichever one of these numbers is the smallest, and I divide through by that smallest ratio. So for instance, this one is appearing to me to be the smallest number. I'm going to write that on top. So I'm going to divide them all by that same value. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just copy this. And I'm going to take and divide these numbers and divide them through. What I'm trying to figure out is what is the ratio of each of these elements to each other? This one is going to equal 1 because that number divided into itself is 1. This one, which doesn't want to move for me, I needed to move them over just a little bit. This one, the second one, is going to be 2 something. If I punch it in, let's see what the actual decimals are. 6.65674 6032 divided by 3.33055786 8. Throws an error because I got two decimal places in there. Now I gotta type it in again. 6.65674 6032 divided by 3.33055 7868. Gives me one, it actually comes out to 1.99868. It's very close to two. And so I'm just gonna leave it as two. And the other number over here is gonna be very close to one. 3.33 divided by 3.33 is one. This is telling me that my ratios are C1H2O1. So I've pulled from the carbon, I've pulled from the hydrogen, and for the oxygen. And that is my empirical formula. Now, sometimes these ratios will come out like a 1.5 or a 1.75 or a 2.5. They'll come out in a ratio that is like 1.5, 1.25, 1.75. If that happens, you multiply through by a value that takes them all to whole numbers. For instance, if I got 1.5, then what I'd want to do is I'd want to go through and multiply everything by 2 so that 1.5 becomes a 3 and I get a whole number ratio. So examples, let's say that the ratios were 1 fractional ratio example. Let's say that what I wound up getting was C1H1.5. Then what I do is I take that and I go through and I multiply it by three, each of the subscripts, two, sorry, in order to turn the ratios into C2H3. And I would get whole numbers. If I had something that was ratios like C1H2.25, then what I need to do is I need to multiply it by a ratio that's going to increase this number to a whole number. Since I'm in quarters, I would probably want to multiply that by 4. That's going to give me a ratio of C4 and 8, 9, H9.
Sure, I thought it was redundant to write ones.
It is. It is redundant to write ones, but because we're coming out with these ratios, I'm just writing them to see how we're multiplying, just to think about these what these ratios would be. So you're okay. Right.
So that doesn't necessarily have to be like in our answer.
No. In fact, I wouldn't normally write the one. I'm just showing how I would go through, and because of the steps that we're doing and because we're dealing with these numbers, I'm trying to think about actually seeing the number, and I'm wanting to see it as I go through and do my multiplication.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, and so we're multiplying by a number. One way to think of this is that if your fraction is 1.5, that equals 3/2. And so you're going to want to multiply that by whatever that denominator is to get the whole number. Actually, that is not the way that I wanted to write that. That doesn't mathematically make sense. Let's do it this way. 1.5 equals 3/2. And so what I would do is I would take 3/2 and multiply it by 2. That makes much more sense to get the whole number which is 3. If it is something like 1.25, this is equaling 5 no
5/4 no
yeah I was yes that's where we're going thank you. And so what we do is we take the 5/4 and we multiply this by 4, pulling that denominator out in order to get the whole number 5. So just ways of taking fractions, the different types of fractions that we would have. Okay, so Eric asked if this was formaldehyde, and did I actually make the calculator slide out on accident there? I've got a calculator that I can pull out as I need to. I don't usually do that on the screen. I keep forgetting. I usually just reach for my standard calculator, but yeah, the calculator can slide out and I can use it. On an iPad, if you have an iPad, I know some of you are using them. The calculator that I'm using, which is really nice, it is, where is that calculator? There it is. I got to find the name of it. It just says calculator on my thing, but the calculator has great functions in it. And if while you are in one app, you swipe up from the bottom of the screen, you can drag up a switcher to be able to switch applications. And if you take the calculator one, hold on to it and drag it up. Oh, that didn't work. Try it one more time. If you take the calculator, hold it and drag it up, what it normally does, oh, because I'm in the app. Darn it, I grabbed the wrong one. Come on, Jason, you can do this. You can then place it on the screen, have the two apps open simultaneously. And with the two apps open simultaneously, you can move the calculator wherever you want. And when you want to get it off the screen, you slide it off. If you want it back, you pull it back from the right-hand side again. And it's always there anytime you need it after that, which is kind of cool. It's just a nice way to be able to use the iPad to be able to have the calculator there and work with it. Okay, so Eric was asking if this ratio there was formaldehyde. Formaldehyde was one option because CH2O could be the formula for formaldehyde. However, there was one more piece of information in my problem. My problem said that the molar mass of the compound is 180.16 grams per mole. Find both the empirical and the molecular formula. We have found the empirical. Now we need to find the molecular. The molecular is a multiple, a whole number multiple of the empirical. So what I do is I find the molar mass of the empirical, divide the compound by the empirical, and then I figure out how many times the empirical unit goes into it, and I multiply the subscripts by that result. So
what was the thing you just said? It's the whole number.
Watch it. Let's see. It'll make sense when I do it.
Okay.
Watch what happens. So my empirical that I found in this problem, this was my empirical formula, C1H2O1. So here's my empirical formula. CH2O. My molecular mass is 180.16 grams per mole. The empirical is some value times CH2O is going to equal this molecular formula. We could say CXH2XOX, and that is going to equal 180.16 grams per mole. And I need to figure out what X is. The way that I figure out what X is like this. this guy equals 180.16. If I calculate out what the molar mass of this piece is, it is 12.01 plus 2 times 1.008 plus 16. The molar mass of this piece is 30.03 grams per mole. That means that X times 30.03 is going to equal 80.16. So to find X, X equals 180.16 grams per mole divided by 30.03 grams per mole. That is going to equal 6.
Where did you get the 30.03 grams per mole?
And the 180.
This piece was given in the problem. This piece was calculated by taking carbon 1 times 12.01 plus hydrogen 2 times 1.008 and oxygen 1 times 16.00 and adding them together. Just the way that I would do normal molar mass, 2.016 and 16.00, and add these together. That is my 30.026 grams per mole. And then following the sig figs rules, I rounded at that spot to give me the 30.03.
At the end of this problem, the X equals 180 over 30, is that usually or always going to end up as a whole number like that? I was kind of impressed by that.
Yeah, if you have done everything right, it will always end up as a whole number. It might end up, because of rounding errors or other little sig figs issues, it might end up something like 5.99... 7.2 something. It might end up 6.001723. It might end up with some decimals, but it will be both of these very close to a whole number.
And if it is not a whole number, that just means we did like a rounding error and we should go back, or
yes. If it comes out that you got like 6.3, 7.2, something that's clearly not a round number.
Yeah, that's way off.
Then you're off. Then you did something wrong. You got to go back and just check through and make sure that you didn't do something wrong somewhere.
So what do we do with x equals 6?
Great answer. Great question. What we do is we do the final answer. We say that the empirical is CH2O. And that the molecular formula equals 6 times the empirical, CH2O, and that equals C6H12O6. And that is your answer. So you were asked to find both the empirical formula and the molecular formula, and now we have found both.
Sweet.
Got it?
In words, what does X represent?
X represents the number of empirical units that make up the molecular.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
Okay. We've been going for about an hour. You guys ready for a break? We'll come back. We'll do a little more. Sweet. Okay, let's do that. Let's take a 10-minute break from here. We'll come back. We'll do another one of these just to solidify it, and then we'll launch into some other stuff.
You don't have to cry no more. You don't have to sigh no more. What you got to do is let me love you, baby, and I'll make everything all right. Oh, yes, I will. You don't have to love, you know. To make him understand, all you got to do is let me love you, baby, and I'll make everything alright. Oh yes, I will. Baby, can't you see how it makes me feel to see you so broke down? To make him understand, all you got to do is let me love you, baby. I'll make everything alright. Oh yes, I will. Everything all right. Oh yeah, baby, won't you try me one time, baby? Oh
yeah. Sure, he's
light, cause it's not hard. His charm is gonna get him through the night. Cause if he wanna rock, he rocks. If he wanna roll, he rolls. He can roll with the punches, long as he feels like he's in control. And if he wanna stay, he stays. If he wanna go, he goes. He doesn't care how he gets there, long as he gets somewhere he knows. Oh no, heavy makeup and cut t-shirt. Every girl I wants to be her. They look the same already, by just reading the magazine secrets, forgetting the topical regrets. Cause if she comes on all alone, the night's a bust. It's a must. Swiveling her hips and the look she gives, it's all a trust. If only in the morning she knew where she lived. Cause if she wanna rock, she rocks. She wanna roll, she rolls. She can roll with the punches, as long as she feels like she's in control. And if she wanna stay, she stays. If she wanna go, she goes. She doesn't care how she gets there, as long as she gets somewhere she knows. Oh no, na 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 na. Drinking at the bar, cash the flow, shot to shot, it's getting hot, advance the plot to see how far it's gonna go. All the pencil, ditch the friends and grab a cab, another chance to cheap romance. Does it count cause the room is spinning? Nothing to lose tonight, they both are winning. And they fall in love as they fall in love, they sing. If they wanna rock, they rock. If they wanna roll, they roll. Roll with the punch as long as they feel like they're in control. And if they want to stay, they stay. If they want to go, they go. They don't care how they get there, long as they get somewhere they know.
All right, let's see. I don't know how long that was. I think we're there. Stop the share there, start broadcasting here. Come back to Notability. And a new problem. So what I said we do is one more of these problems. I've got one more to do, and then a couple more things to show you in terms of percentages and percent compositions and how we can use all that. And those are going to be very helpful for this next section where we start doing concentrations. They just help in terms of conceptually understanding what it is that we're doing. Okay, so this problem, where did I lost it? There we go. What I've got is a compound with a molar mass of 240 grams per mole is found to have a composition of 75.95% carbon, 17.72% nitrogen, and 6.33% hydrogen. What is the molecular formula? This is a dye molecule, by the way. And this dye molecule, when they analyzed it, was found to be 75.95% carbon, 17.72% nitrogen, and 6.33% hydrogen. And we want to find the molecular formula for this dye molecule. So we start off in the exact same way that we did before. We start off by making a table that is going to have our carbon. And the order is not important. So we can do any order we want, but carbon, we'll just do it in the order that they gave us the percentages, and we list the percentages: 75.95%, 17.72%, and 6.33%. Now we're going to go from the percents to the mass, from the mass to the moles, and then we'll get the ratio. And then if we need to, we'll divide by small. So that's the way that I remember it. Percent to mass to moles, divide by small, multiply to whole. That will get us to the empirical formula. And we'll go through and do each one of those steps. So our percentages automatically become grams. We assume that we have a 100 gram sample. And then with a 100 gram sample, the percentages become the number of grams. Once we have the number of grams, then we use the molar masses on the periodic table to convert those masses in grams into a number of moles. So the molar equations are going to be 75.95 grams, and carbon weighs 12.01 for every one mole. So we'll get the number of moles of carbon. For nitrogen, it is 17.72 grams, and nitrogen weighs 14.01 from the periodic table for every one mole of nitrogen. And hydrogen weighs 1.008 for every one mole. And then I like to write these out, and I like to leave them long, because if you truncate them, if you apply sig figs, when you divide through to get the ratios, you will not get nice whole numbers. You will not get pretty numbers. You will create round off errors, and it will make your job more difficult. So leave them long in the calculator. And I could use this calculator. Well, maybe I can. Let's see. 75, that way you can actually see what I'm doing. Although I have to listen to the sound. I don't know if I like that. It doesn't do that normally. But I don't have headphones on. So this is 6.32389675207.06. That's the moles. We'll get the next one. 17.72 divided by 14.01. 1.2648108493933. And for the last one, 6.33 divided by 1.008. 6.279 76 194 762. So leaving those long, and then looking at those, noticing that the smallest is the nitrogen. So yeah, the calculator bling. I know, I don't know how to turn off the bling. The bling's got to go away. That's annoying. There's got to be something in the config file that I should be able to go and shut that sound off. The calculator is cool, though, because it solves quadratic equations. It solves all kinds of algebraic equations, and it will do all the algebra for you, which is kind of a nice little tool there. So these are our moles. Now we want to find the ratios. So in the ratio, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take each one of these and divide it by that smallest number. I gotta get that line out of there. And we take and divide the hydrogen number. Okay, so my ratios are going to come out to, for nitrogen, 1, because that was the smallest number. But this other one, 6.32389675207.06 divided by 1.26. And what I normally do is throw this thing into memory so I don't have to keep retyping it. This comes out to 5. And the other one comes out to 6.27976190476 divided by 1.26488493. This is 4.96, which I'm going to read as approximately 5 as well. I just wanted to see if it was going to come out to something like 4.75, that's the only reason I typed it in, because I was seeing that there was a difference here. It was a little bit smaller than this one, and I just wanted to make sure that it was going to come out to a nice round number. So my empirical formula then is C5NH5. And they gave me the molar mass. They said the molar mass was 240 grams per mole. So we'll see how many grams per mole this is. And we'll calculate this out. Five times, here, we'll do it this way so you can watch me do it. Clear. Five times 12.01 plus 14.01 plus five times 1.008. 79.1. So this equals 79.10 grams per mole. And now that I know what that empirical formula is, I can take my molar mass given in the problem. So we'll go back and see that, 240 grams per mole. And we will divide it by the empirical. This is 79.10 grams per mole. And I'll get that value, which is the ratio, the X value, 240 divided by residue, 3. This does equal 3.034, but we're rounding these off to whole numbers when allowed. That is my X value that I'm going to multiply by my empirical value. So I'm going to take 3 and multiply it by the C5H5N. I've changed the order because normally hydrogen comes before nitrogen in the order. And that is going to equal C15H15N3. And if I calculate out that molar mass, that should be 240 grams per mole. Why are we allowed to round here? Ayla, we're allowed to round here because we're looking for whole numbers. That with these ratios are all supposed to be whole numbers. So when we get a number that is so close to 3.033, this is not something that we need to try to resolve in terms of a whole number. It can be rounded out to 3. It goes to... the other question, what is the smallest unit you typically round to? 0.25, is that supposed to be 0.25? The typical thing that I would round to is I'm looking for units of 1.25, 1.50, 1.75. Usually they come in sort of quarters like this. So this would be 5/4, 3/2. I don't know, brain is losing it now. So that was 3 plus 4, what, 7/4? In terms of ratios, and if I had these ratios of 5/4, I would multiply by 4 to get a whole number 5. If it's ratios of 3/2, I multiply by 2 in order to get 3. And if it's ratios of 7/4, I multiply by 4 in order to get a value of 7. If it's 1, I don't multiply by anything. I just keep the 1. So anything that is less than a quarter, just round it down to the whole number. Anything close to a quarter, then I round it out to a quarter, and then I need to multiply in order to get whole numbers. But that step is happening up here in these ratios. This is where that would occur. Here, this number should always be a whole number. You should never have to do anything fancy with this number, because the empirical formula should divide evenly into the molar mass, and it should be darn near a perfect round number every time. I hope that's clear.
Why does hydrogen come before nitrogen?
Customary. It's just tradition. that we normally, the order in which we write formulas is usually carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, sulfur. Those are just the customary orders in which the elements appear in a formula.
You had said, so the answer, that answer, that 3 times C5H5N should be equal to what?
240.
That's what I thought. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Should come up to the molar mass that we were starting with. Okay. So that's the second example that we've gone through. And that was a pretty good example. Does everybody feel, or are there any other questions that came up, I should say, in terms of why I did things or what I did? Okay, let's see some other ideas or concepts that we can use that are similar to this. So this goes to percent composition. In percent composition, we can calculate percent composition instead of just using it. And we can calculate percent composition from a formula. Sometimes it's interesting to do this. For example, calculate the percent composition of nitrogen and hydrogen in ammonia. Formula NH3. So how do we actually do this? If you think about what percent composition is, percent is equal to the part divided by the whole times 100. That's what percent means. And so if we want to calculate the percent of nitrogen, the percent of nitrogen in this compound is going to be the nitrogen divided by the NH3 times 100. In other words, it is going to equal 14.01 grams per mole for nitrogen divided by the sum of all of them. So that is 14.01 plus 3 times 1.008, it's the molar mass, 17.034 grams per mole. And then I multiply by 100, and that is going to give me 14.01 divided by second function answer times 100, 82.247.270.17%, and this does have sig figs. So sig figs, this would be 4, and I had 5 here. We'll round out to 4, and I didn't save enough room on the page for it, but I kind of want to sneak it in there and not have to knock it onto another page. So this equals 82.25% nitrogen. We can go through and do the same thing to get the hydrogen. Or we can realize that nitrogen and hydrogen have to add up to 100. And we could get the percent hydrogen just by what's left over. So a couple of different ways to get that. Ayla, why are we allowed to round here? Because here what we're doing is we're actually calculating out a percent composition, which is a fractional number. And that fractional number is assumed to have sig figs along with that fractional number. What we were doing before we were looking for the subscripts in a formula, and the subscripts in a formula are not allowed to be fractional, and they should come out to be whole numbers. So that's the difference in the two types of numbers that we're looking at. So percent hydrogen. We could do the same thing here. Let's show how to calculate it though. Percent hydrogen is going to equal the amount of hydrogen in NH3 times 100. But there are three hydrogens. So note that this subscript 3, I will need to multiply this guy by 3 so that I am correctly getting the percentage. It is not just the percentage of one hydrogen, it is the part, the three hydrogens, divided by the whole.
And this process is just an alternative to subtraction?
Yes, but I wanted to see, because if I didn't show this, that it needed to be, this subscript needs to come up into here, you might not realize that if you were calculating it. And so I just wanted to be clear there that that's how we would arrive at the right number. So this is going to be 3 times 1.008 divided by the 14.01 plus 3 times 1.008, the full mass. And then we multiply that by 100. So that is 3 times 1.008, that's 3.024, divided by, what was it, 17.034? These are both grams per mole, so the units cancel. And that is going to be 17.752729.83%. We'll round off sig figs wise. I think we're supposed to be at 4. So that's going to equal 17.75% hydrogen. And when I add those two percentages together, I would come up with 100%. Everybody good? All right. Let me extend this. So we've just shown how we can calculate the percentage of hydrogen and nitrogen in a formula. Let me ask you another question. What is the percent of nitrate in ferric nitrate? Notice now I'm not asking about a single element. I'm asking about an ion. I'm asking about a part out of a whole. Remember that percent equals part divided by whole times 100. So literally what we're going to do is we're going to take the percent nitrate is going to equal 3 times the mass of nitrate divided by the whole FeNO3 3 times multiplied by 100. And we do these just in molar mass. So we calculate out the molar mass of nitrate. We multiply it by 3. We calculate out the mass of ferric nitrate, divide it into it, multiply by 100, and we'll get the percent. So it's always the part divided by the whole.
And I know electrons weigh almost nothing, so will the charge come into factor at all?
Does not. Remember that an electron is 1/2000th the mass of a proton. So literally, we are one part in 2,000 parts. It wouldn't even show up in the sig figs. So no, the electron doesn't play a role in that. We just ignore it entirely. So that's right. So this is going to be if I were to write it out, nitrate 3 times 14.01 plus 3 times oxygen, which is 16, I'll get the nitrate part. And for iron, need the molar mass of iron. 53, let me get a periodic table. 55.845. So 55.845 plus 3 times exactly what we had above for the nitrate. So 14.01 plus 3 times 16 times 3. This is 186.03 grams per mole in the numerator. And add to that 55.845, 241.875 grams per mole times 100, 186.03 divided by 241.875 times 100, 76.911. These are likely to have 4 sig figs. I'm just going to round it off to 4 sig figs percent NO3 minus. So I was able to just calculate out the percent of a component in a formula which is kind of cool to be able to do. So it's not even, just didn't write the zero oxygen. Yeah, that's right. You're correct. Jeremy, 16 is oxygen, which is 16.00. And because I knew I was putting it into the calculator to 4 sig figs, I just left off the 00. That's correct. And I want to show you one more of these. Let me show you one more problem type like this. What percent of copper sulfate is water? This formula, CuSO4.5H2O, this is called a hydrate. And what it means is it means for every 1 mole of CuSO4, there are 5 moles of water in the crystal. It means that the hydrate, that this thing is packaged as a group with water in it, and they are inseparable from each other unless I heat it and drive off the water. So one of the things that I could do is I could go through and drive off the water. But I could ask this, because these ratios of the coefficient and the subscripts all hold, I could go through and ask, what is the percent water in this entire formula? And it is the exact same thing that we've done. It is the percent divided part divided by whole. So percent just goes back to the same concept. Percent equals part.
Does that dot always indicate that?
That's what that dot indicates. It indicates a hydrate. It indicates that the two are associated and that they are distinct, a copper sulfate molecule with 5 water molecules, and that they are all locked in a structure. So here's my copper sulfate. And that means that I have water molecules that are surrounding it that are locked in the crystal structure. and that that forms one crystal. And it is called copper sulfate pentahydrate. And cool. That's the name of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take and, oh, this is times 100. And we're going to take and do this calculation that our percent of water is going to equal 5 water molecules divided by the whole copper sulfate plus 5H2O. And then we will multiply that by 100 and we will get our percent. So we do it exactly the same way. Nothing changes. We're just extending this concept. So what we did is we started by looking at a single atom within a formula. And so we did the nitrogen divided by the ammonia. So we did a single atom. We extended that concept to say, oh, we could look at nitrate, a polyatomic within the entire molecule. And now we're extending that even further to say, oh, within a large formula like this, we can even have water as a percentage. And we can look at that water as a percentage. All of them are the same thing. Percent equals part divided by whole times 100. So all you do is you find the mass of that part, divide it by the mass of the whole, and multiply by 100. So literally, this is going to be 5 water molecules, 5 times 2 times 1.008 plus 16.00. That's my water molecule. And then I will need to do the copper sulfate. So we'll need to get copper 63.55 plus sulfur, which is 32.07, plus 4 times the oxygen, plus now 5 times the quantity, 2 times 1.008, plus 16.00. And then I'll multiply all of that by 100. The top part is 90.08 grams per mole. The denominator comes out to 249.70. I guess I didn't need this long a line. So 90.08 divided by 249.70 times 100 comes out to 36.08. Got the wrong eraser now. I wanted the whole one. There we go. 36.08% water after rounding for sig figs. In chemistry, is a dot ever used to imply multiplication, or is it always an X because of hydrates? The answer to that question is, it depends on who's doing the math. Hydrates are always demonstrated in a formula with a dot. We don't usually use a dot to represent multiplication in chemistry, although mathematically, when some people are writing it out, they prefer to use dots for multiplication. Some people prefer to use a multiplication symbol. Some people prefer to use parentheses. Notice that I've switched ways that I'm writing it in the middle. So it can be any or all of the above. But in a formula, we always use the dot to indicate a hydrate in a formula. Okay, anybody have any trouble with that second piece there? That's all looking pretty good. All right, so I think then that takes us to molarity. And I think because we're doing percentages, I'm trying to figure out where I want to, how I want to do concentration.
Could I ask a quick question, sir?
Yes, please.
It's not about the math. It's about the copper sulfate pentahydrate. I don't quite understand what you mean by crystal, like what that actually looks like in real life.
Okay. That I can deal with. When we look at sodium chloride is a repeating pattern of sodium ions and chloride ions in a crystal structure. And when we look at it three-dimensionally, they alternate. And there is no clear indication of where the material starts and where the material stops. So what we do in chemistry is we take and reduce it down to a crystal structure. And this repeats basically in a pattern that is three-dimensional. And so we can think of this pattern as continuing to repeat through this entire crystal structure. What we do is we split this up into the smallest box that we can fit, and we look and see what is the ratio of sodium to chloride in that smallest box. And what we find is that the ratio of sodium to chloride is one sodium to one chloride, and that's what we call the ionic formula. So the ionic formula really is an empirical formula for ionic materials. Does that make sense? Okay. Then what happens when we take and look at something that is like a hydrate? The hydrate has copper and sulfate, which are repeating in a 2+ and a 2- pattern in the same sort of way that the structure is repeating with the sodium chloride. However, interspersed within this are water molecules. And I'm not going to be able to draw it adequately. But the water molecules are all embedded in this crystal structure. And when I reduce it down to the smallest repeating pattern that I can find, the smallest repeat pattern that I find is one copper to one sulfate to 5 water molecules. And that is sort of the empirical formula of that thing. And that's what we list as its molecular formula. For an ionic material, for a covalent material, that is entirely different. For a covalent material, the covalent materials actually do come in packages that are discrete and separate, and the ratios are included in them. For instance, glucose. Glucose comes in a formula that allows me to be able to see the carbons, the hydrogens, the oxygens, and there is there is no reduced pattern. It just is this pattern. And I can literally see the numbers of carbons and hydrogens and oxygens that are physically bound together because they are not in ions or ratios. There's no repeating pattern to break down, essentially. And so these I can actually see as C6, H12, O6, and the empirical is separate from the molecular. In the ionic, there is no molecular. There is only an empirical within the ionic materials because you're going to the reduced whole numbers that you can find in the crystal structure. I don't know if I confused it more, but I'm watching you as you shake your head each time. And so I'm thinking that I'm making sense each time. But I wanted to make that distinction between something that is ionic and something that is molecular. and that they're different in the way that we calculate them or view them.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool. Concentration. Concentration is a way of measuring a part out of a whole. So concentration is the measurement of the part in the whole or out of the whole. Let's do it that way. There are many different types of concentration. These are mainly used for solutions. Solutions, a solution is comprised of two parts. It equals a solute. This is the thing dissolved. Divided by the solvent. Actually, I take that back. Divided by the solution. Which is equal to the solute plus the solvent. Where the solvent is the thing doing the dissolving. So we have a solution that is made up of solute, solvent. This is the thing doing the dissolving. For instance, salt water. In salt water, the solute equals sodium chloride. The solvent equals water. The solution equals the sodium chloride plus the water. And so we have the parts, the solute, the solvent, and the solution, the sodium chloride plus the water. Now, there's many different types of concentration. I said they're mainly used for solutions, but they can be used for other types of materials as well. Anything that comes in a mixture can be thought of as having a concentration. And by mixture, I mean, like, think about a metal alloy. You could think about the percentage of nickel in a nickel alloy or the percentage of iron in an iron alloy that is made up of many different materials. And so these concentrations, while mainly used for solutions, can also be used for solid types of materials as well. The different types of concentration that we have, there is molarity is one. Molarity equals moles of solute per liter solution. So that is one type. There are molarity, there is molality, there is normality, there is osmolarity. These are all similar to molarity. But used for special things. We don't run into those very often, so I'm not going to cover those right now. Molarity is the main one. And then we have the percent types. the percent types fall under percent, parts per million, and parts per billion. These are called PPM and PPB. And we can also go parts per trillion. I mean, we could use many different types of the percent types. And percent itself is really part per hundred. So percent is no different than parts per million or parts per billion. It just has a different denominator. So we think of parts, we think of percent. It says molality, yes. Edgar, it's M-O-L-A-L-I-T-Y, molality. So there's molality, normality, osmolarity, molarity. And since we were just dealing with percents, I kind of like the idea of starting at the percent concentration and then working our way into molarity, moles per liter, which has a very specific concentration, and multiple ways to go through these. So let's look at percents, and let's start with percent since that's where we kind of left off. In a percent is concentration, we normally read the percent as either weight by weight or volume by volume. So percent can be percent by weight, usually written percent WT slash WT, weight by weight. Or it can be percent by volume. That is usually written percent V by V. You'll often see this in beverages, wine, beer, that they are listed as a percent volume by volume. And so that you can look at a wine bottle and, for example, you can see wine lists percent alcohol as 13.0% V slash V, meaning volume to volume. The interpretation there is that as a concentration, we are saying that in percent, it is the part divided by the whole times 100. And because this is volume to volume, we are interpreting this as 13 milliliters of alcohol for every 100 milliliters of wine. It is the part divided by the whole times 100. So 13.0% could be milliliters of alcohol to milliliters of wine times 100. But because it's volume to volume, the ratio holds regardless of what units we put on it because the units cancel each other out. So notice that milliliters cancels each other out and that this is unitless in essence, which means that I can apply any volume units I want. So this is a great big or. This could be 13 gallons of alcohol divided by 100 gallons of wine times 100, and the ratio still holds. Or I could use any units I want. I could say that this is 13 liters per 100 liters, or 13 ounces per 100 ounces. The units, be them English or SI, are completely irrelevant and they cancel each other out. So I can choose whatever units I want in order to do this, and I can use this percent volume by volume in any way I want to answer a problem. Watch this. Let's say that how many milliliters of alcohol are in a 750 milliliter bottle of wine? With a concentration of 12.5% volume to volume alcohol. So the way that I interpret that percentage is I interpret that percentage to mean that there are 12.5 milliliters of alcohol out of 100 milliliters of wine, same units, volume to volume. And because they're asking me, my desired is milliliters, I'm going to choose milliliters as my unit for my conversion factor. And another way to say this, based on our equalities, the way that we were doing equalities before, 12.5 milliliters of alcohol equals 100 milliliters of wine. And so in a roadmap sense, my roadmap is going to go from milliliters of wine to milliliters of alcohol. And that 12.5 is my conversion factor per 100. So when I go and I start to write the problem out, 750 milliliters of alcohol times conversion factor for every 100 milliliters of alcohol, I get 12.5 milliliters. Excuse me, I made a mistake. Two mistakes I made. This was supposed to be wine. And wine, I get 12.5 milliliters of alcohol. And milliliters of wine cancel each other out. So it is 750 divided by 100 times 12.5. It's 93.75 milliliters of alcohol in that bottle. And I do need to do sig figs. So sig figs, you'll see that I put the decimal point here. This was a 3 sig fig value for my milliliters. This is a 3 sig fig value for the milliliters of alcohol. The percent here, that 100, is exact because it's the definition of what percent is. And so I'll need to round to 3. And my answer is 93 point, round even, this is the round even rule, 93.8 milliliters of alcohol is my final answer. Did everybody see or understand how to I use that percentage in that problem there? And how I can assume any volume units I want on a percentage. Percentages are super easy to use because of that. And you just need to pay attention to what is it at the tail end? Is it volume to volume or is it weight to weight? Weight to weight is used more in solids. Volume to volume is used more in liquids. And weight to weight, what units would I put on weight to weight? Could be any units I want, as long as they're the same.
Grams.
Yeah. So it could be grams to grams, could be pounds to pounds, could be kilograms to kilograms. As long as the two units are the same, they cancel out. And so I get to use whatever units I want, be them SI or English. And it doesn't matter, which is kind of cool. So percents are super easy. parts per million, parts per billion are equally easy to use. A part per million or part per billion, PPM, part per million, this equals the part divided by the whole. Instead of times 100, it's times 1 million. That's what a PPM equals. So whereas we did percent, think about percent, where I said percent equals part per hundred, the part per hundred means take the part, divide it by the whole, and multiply by 100. So what we're literally doing here is that the 100 is my multiplier to make my percentage. The million is my multiplier in part per million. Other than that, they're identical. So in our interpretation, if my interpretation, here's some examples. If my interpretation is that I have, let's do it, 11.6, oh, beer is 5.23 or something. If something is 5.23% volume to volume alcohol in beer, then the way that I would construct that conversion factor is to say that it is 5.23 milliliters of alcohol out of 100 milliliters of beer. If I were constructing it were 5.23 parts per million alcohol in some solution, let's just say in water, then the way that I would interpret that conversion factor is to say that it would be 5.23 milliliters of alcohol. And what goes in my denominator?
Million.
Milliliters, but how many milliliters?
Million.
A million, yes. It is a million milliliters of water. And that's how I would construct the conversion factor. If it were parts per billion, what number goes in the denominator?
Billion.
A billion. And that's how I would construct the conversion factor.
Would you ever use, what's it called, scientific notation?
Or yes, absolutely. So that, yes. So this would be 5.23 milliliters of alcohol in scientific notation, 1 × 10⁶ milliliters of water. Would be a whole lot easier to do. So yes, parts per million, parts per billion, we tend to use scientific notation in order to start to do those. You see these parts per million, parts per billion used in water quality a lot, because the concentration of things that we're measuring in water quality, the amount of calcium, magnesium, the amount of pesticides, the allowable amount of fluoride, all of those things are very, very tiny. And so they tend to use part per million or part per billion as opposed to using percent. They're just much more common to use, but they're used in exactly the same way. So so that's cool. All right. I don't quite want to launch into molarity yet because I don't have enough time to do it justice and I don't want to go over. So we will hold molarity and come back and do that first thing tomorrow. Let's open it up for questions and see if you guys have any questions at this point. Can I scroll to the concentration definition? Yes, I can. Concentration, the measurement of the part out of the whole. That's the definition of concentration. The part out of the whole. Any other questions come up? That was a bit today. We went through a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I know. I know. The brain starts to spin a little bit. It's okay. You guys will catch up. I know you will. You were tracking through the examples. And as long as you're tracking through the examples and I'm seeing heads nodding, which I was, I feel fairly confident that you guys can reprocess it, go back through your notes, and catch up pretty quickly. And okay, so let's cut it there. Let's give you guys a break. Let's all go get some lunch before we start the afternoon lab. And I'll catch the afternoon people today. The morning people, you guys have some work cut out for you. I got those quizzes up and I got that nomenclature worksheet and I got some things for you to do. So go catch a break, get some lunch, and then you got some work to catch up on.
I have an unrelated question.
Thank you.
Oh no. Okay. I'm ready. I'm bracing for it.
Do you know anything about, is so unrelated, about how they're doing wait lists this fall?
Ooh. Wait lists should not change this fall. In fact, I have several pieces of information. We've lost a bunch of people in the class, but I have several pieces.
I'm here.
No. I know you're there. Several things are going on right now. Number one, it has been determined that spring is also going to be an online semester.
Wow. Okay.
So that has been determined. So we've got a whole year of online ahead, fall and spring. Wait lists should not change. The way they're handling a wait list should not be any different than the way that they have traditionally handled it, other than the fact that because we are doing online, I expect that most instructors will be more generous in adding people on the wait list and allow the class to expand. That is completely dependent on the instructor though. So instructors are going to look at that as a workload issue, and they're going to be concerned that the campus is going to be piling more workload on us, but we're also going to be more sympathetic towards our students. And I think we will be allowing more people in. And so I would expect that within reason, if a wait list has 5 to 7 to 8, I'm sure the instructor will incorporate. You start getting over 10, and I think the instructor might have some hesitation in taking everybody on the wait list.
I'm like, but the 9th and the 5th.
If you're in the 5th, I would assume you're going to get in.
9th is a little iffy, but we'll
see. Yeah, I would expect that instructors are going to be accommodating in that way. Okay. Second thing is that the federal government, I got to not swear here. The federal government.
You. I got you. You're good.
Yeah. The federal government is making it a rule that any student who is on an educational visa must attend classes in person or their educational visa is being revoked and they must go back to their country of origin.
Whoa.
No.
That is so shady.
It is so shady. They did that on Monday. Cabrillo is joining other colleges in fighting that. And so we don't have a final rule on what's going to happen. So Cabrillo is joining in the fight to try to fight that process. And because all these colleges are going to be going online, and colleges that are not going online are not going online for financial reasons. In other words, even like Harvard has decided that the entire semester will be online, but they're opening up their dorms to allow students to come into the dorms. But it's got to be purely financial reasons. There's no other reason to open up your dorms if all your classes are online. So even those colleges that have a lot of foreign students are still all online, and they're going to lose those foreign students if they don't find a way to accommodate that. And yet we can't open up our classrooms because it's not safe to do so. And so this is a whole big thing. And I don't know where it's going to break down yet, but I have some, if you fall into that category, and I've already had one student contact me, if there are others, or you have friends that fall into that category of being on an educational visa, put me in touch with them and I will give them contacts at Cabrillo to contact to be able to get some assistance and help, or at least to get good information and current information. So we'll try to make sure that we are sympathetic to those of our fellow classmates who may fall into that situation, and try to be compassionate, try to be helpful, and try to put them in touch with the right people at Cabrillo in order to get them current information. Okay? So I just want to throw that out there as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, let's go get some lunch, and we'll move on from there.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye, thank you.
You're welcome, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.